When a massive tornado hits the city of Joplin, Missouri, people run for their lives and cling to their loved ones. It looks like nothing can save them. But then, they showed up. And then, we take a look at a story about a young couple. Everything seems to be going fine in their relationship, until she notices that her boyfriend, all of a sudden, loves to cook her food. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having a lot of fun out there doing whatever you're doing. First off, riding in a Dead Rabbit Command right now on his own personal pet Velociraptor, it's Kyler Wartman. That's not him. That's the Velociraptor. Sounds like a cross between a motorcycle and a man who's 44 years old doing sound effects in his closet. It's somewhere in between there. Kyler, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the Patreon, or if you're not cool enough to have a pet Velociraptor, that's fine too. Just help spread the word about the show. Really, really helps out a lot. Kyler, I'm going to go ahead and toss you safely. I'm staying away from Velociraptor. I'm going to toss you the oars for the Dead Rabbit rowboat. We're going to go ahead and leave behind Dead Rabbit Command. We are okay. Technically, we're going to Missouri, so we could have taken any vehicle, but it's been a long time since we've taken the rowboat, so we're going to take a nice, leisurely trip down the streams and rivers of the United States. We're leaving behind Dead Rabbit Command. We are headed out to Joplin, Missouri. Splish, splash. Splish, splash. The oar. That's the sound oars make? You didn't know? You're not a nautical man like myself? We are in Joplin, Missouri. It's May 22nd, 2011. Now, if you know anything, if you're from Joplin or if you live anywhere in Missouri, you know that is probably the one day in the entire history of the city of Joplin you don't want to be there. May 22nd, 2011. That's the day the tornado hit. Now, not a tornado, the tornado. To be fair, before this, there had only been two tornadoes since 1971 that hit the city of Joplin. And really, it was just kind of the area of Joplin. So at 5:10 p.m., when they start sending off tornado sirens in the city of Joplin, people are like, it's been almost 40 years since a tornado has actually hit Joplin. Maybe you'll see a little, cow flying up in the air in a little barn. That'll be it. And hopefully it's not your cow in your barn. You can go back to work. So when the tornado sirens start going off in the city, some people paid attention to them, but other people just figured, those meteorologists, they just like their loud sounds. But here we are at 5:10 p.m. It's just a normal afternoon. This tornado hits Joplin. It's rolling down the street. So I've never been in a tornado, but I'm vaguely aware. I saw this documentary called Wizard of Oz once. I'm vaguely aware of what they do. I mean, obviously, super destructive. They'll destroy houses. They'll knock stuff over. But I guess I didn't really understand the extent of it. This tornado is actually considered one of the deadliest tornadoes in human history, this tornado that hit Joplin. You had cars thrown into houses. Steel was rolled like paper. Manhole covers flying through the air. I mean, just not, you could pick any two of those, you're still having a bad day, right? The manhole covers are terrifying. This tornado got into excess of 200 miles per hour. It hit a hospital? This is the thing, people were expecting it to hit the area, maybe. But this thing rolled through downtown. It hit a hospital, shut off the power, backup generators didn't work, people on ventilators died. This tornado did such damage to the hospital, it deformed the foundation. It warped the earth under it. They had to end up tearing the hospital down. It hit a nursing home. It's like this thing was looking for the weakest people to pick on. It's like, where's the daycare center? It hit a nursing home. Nursing home collapsed, killing a bunch of elderly residents. It flattened both a Walmart and a Home Depot. You kind of need those to rebuild. That was the one thing that everyone was thinking, this sucks. You're watching your house float away. You're in the basement. You get house. But you're like, I'll go to Walmart later. I'll go to Walmart, grab some wood, build a new house. The Walmart was destroyed. The Home Depot was destroyed. We're talking big buildings. Again, these aren't little Auntie M houses. These are actual buildings. At one point, a Pepsi distribution plant. Nothing but concrete and steel gets completely leveled. This tornado just tears through the city. And people weren't expecting that. Again, with the tornado sirens, they're not thinking it's going to take a leisurely stroll through the center of town. There's one terrifying story I'm going to tell you. There was a Pizza Hut manager named Christopher Lucas. They're in their Pizza Hut, and you hear the sirens, you don't really think anything of it, and then you see this tornado that got to be a mile wide. It led a path of destruction 22 miles long, but the tornado itself was a mile wide. People were trying to outdrive it. They couldn't. Nothing that big. You're pretty much screwed at that point. Christopher sees this tornado coming down the street. He orders all of his employees into the walk-in freezer because, I mean, any port in a storm. And they go to close it. Now, a lot of walk-in freezers, I used to work at Godfather's Pizza, they're usually kind of jury-rigged a bit. So they're not the most sanitary, but there's like, so you're not constantly unlocking it. There's usually like some kind of like thing you can do to make it easier to open and close, basically. And it seems like in this case, they had a bungee cord. They have it rigged up that way. They run into the walk-in freezer and he goes to shut the door. But at this point, the wind pressure is so much that he can't even get the door shut. So now he's trying to hold the door shut of the walk-in freezer. And there's a bungee cord that is used in the operation. That's not how walk-in freezers are supposed to be used. There's a bungee cord that this place used for, you know, whatever way to kind of rig it to make it easier to use. He has the bungee cord wrapped around his arm. He's holding the door shut. He has 15 employees behind him huddled in the walk-in freezer, and he's holding it. And the tornado reaches the Pizza Hut, and the force of the wind opens the walk-in freezer door, and because his arm is strapped to the door, he flies out with it, the bungee cord snaps, and this Pizza Hut manager gets sucked up into the tornado. Now, I gotta say this, I was thinking, when I thought of that, I go, that's actually a pretty awesome way to go. Like, no, I'm not being joking either. I mean, like, Christopher, quick thinking, saved 15 people. But, like, if I had to choose between falling off of a mile-high building or getting sucked into a mile-wide tornado any day, dude, that'd be way cooler than, like, drowning. I mean, you figure you're going to spin around a lot and you're going to, like, yell. And I'm sorry if someone from his family is listening to this. I'm not, again, making light of this. But if I'm just, I think that's dope. Like, I think that he probably went out, like, having a good time, right? Because it's a once-in-a-lifetime, literally a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And again, like, not many people can say they died in a tornado. Like, when he's walking around in heaven and he's like, hey, dude, how'd you die? That's what they do in heaven. That's how they greet each other. Hey, how'd you die? And some guy's like, oh, heart attack. Talking to all these people. How many people can say they died in a tornado, dude? And you're like, whoosh, and you're like flying around. It's probably super loud. I don't think it's probably super loud. It is super loud. But then, like, as you're flying around, I'm assuming what kills you is you bumping into other things, like cows and, like, couches and other things that start with CO, cobwebs. You're bumping into all this stuff, and that probably kills you. Like, SUVs flying around, you hit it. You get in the SUV, and you're like, woo! And you, like, lean back in the seat, and the SUV's flying around. Or you just get thrown out of the tornado at a certain point. Or just spins you around so much that you just kind of give up. You're like, I'm dead. Ugh. I'm not joking. Like, I've thought about that. I would rather die jumping into a volcano. And I didn't think about how cool it would be to die in a tornado until I read that story. But jumping in a volcano would be dope. Dying in a tornado would be pretty cool. Hurricane would be kind of lame because that's just like you standing in one location and then you're somewhere else and dead. Because, you know, like the wind blows you super hard. Or, like, it blows a tree down, falls on you, lame. That gets a zero on the Jason Dedo meter. But tornado would be dope, because you just kind of spin around. Falling would suck. Drowning would suck. Burning would suck. But see, the volcano, you just, like, are kind of dope. How many people get to say they die in a volcano? There'd be a bunch of virgins down there. I'd be like, hey, girls, what's going on? So this is not Jason's death-o-meter podcast. I got a little distracted there. Anyway, so this tornado hits, it totally levels the town. 6,900 houses were destroyed. 2,000 buildings were destroyed. It really, really demolished Joplin. And some estimates say 25% of the city was destroyed during this. 161 people were killed. 1,150 people were injured. Here's two weird tidbits before we get into the weirdest part of the story. The Piccadilly Circus was traveling through town. They were doing a vote count. They were going to recount the votes of the past election. And the Piccadilly Circus showed up. And while the Piccadilly Circus was in Joplin, this tornado hit, so they can't perform, obviously. They're like, look at our death-defying stunts. And everyone's like, boring, boring. We just survived one of the worst tornadoes in human history. But because the Piccadilly Circus was there, they actually had elephants that they used to help move debris so first responders could get through. So basically, that would be, I would be out there like just clapping and saluting an elephant as they're like pushing trees around. The guys are like, get out of the way. We're trying to clear the road. I'm just standing in the middle of the road saluting them, throwing peanuts to them. They're like, quit distracting the elephants. Ambulances are waiting. I'm like, make them dance, make them dance. This is probably the most lighthearted podcast you'll ever hear about the Joplin tornado. Here's another odd one. The day after the tornado, so the elephants have moved all the debris around. There's a police officer helping with the recovery efforts. He gets struck by lightning and killed. Could you imagine that? That would suck. On the death-o-meter, lightning would be kind of cool. But imagine you're like working with your buddy, you're working with your partner, and you're trying to like move debris around to save someone, and you hear a K-gah! And you look over and your coworker is smoldering. Not like he has smoldering good looks, not like he's sexy, but he's dead and smoky and stuff. That would be, oh my, and you'd be like, what next? What could possibly go wrong? Well, that's a good segue for where we're headed. Kyler, let's go ahead and hop in the Jason Jalopy. We're going to take a little tour through the town of Joplin. You're like, Jason, are you going to keep cracking jokes and rating their deaths? No, I'm not going to do that. Kyler, why would you think? Why would you think such a thing? The Velociraptor in the backseat's shaking its head. It's like, I got a lot of this information we're going to talk about from an article in the... This journalist is like, please don't reference me. There's an article written by Todd C. Frankel for the St. Louis Dispatch. So 25% of the city was destroyed by some estimates. You had entire families wiped out. Devastating natural disaster. But then you started hearing the stories of survival. People who were huddled in a bathtub. The house ripped apart all around them. One family, they got underneath a mattress, and the mom held onto it as tightly as she could, and the house is just being torn to shreds all around them. You have a story of a 3-year-old girl and her mom. They're trying to outrun the tornado in their car. They can't. It's just too massive. And there's a house, and they figure, let's jump out of the car. Let's try to get into that house. Hopefully someone will open the door. We're out of options. And so the mom and her daughter jump out of the car, and they're running. And the tornado's right on top of them. The mother throws the daughter into a ditch and jumps on top of her daughter. And that tornado passes over them. It picks up their car and the car begins to roll towards the ditch. And the mom is just holding on to her daughter, praying for a miracle. And the car doesn't crush them. The tornado doesn't whip them out of the hole. It simply passes them over. After the danger has passed, the little girl turns to her mom and says, did you see them, mommy? Did you see them? The mom's like, what? She's wiping splinters out of her eye. She's like, I can't see anything. Did you see them, mommy? They saved us. The mom's like, who? Who saved us? And the little girl goes, the butterfly people. They use their wings to make the debris. She knows the word debris. She's 3 years old. The debris, all of the stuff in the tornado, they protected us. As people are digging out of the rubble, as people are kind of walking around this destroyed landscape, they start hearing the same story over and over again. Children were saying that they had seen the butterfly people. Now, all the stories had a few things in common. One, these things could only be seen by kids. Two, they showed up in a way to protect people. A lot of times they used their wings. And three, I shouldn't say all the stories shared this, but you saw this a lot. A lot of the stories weren't firsthand. People were saying, I heard that Molly down the street was protected by a butterfly person. Or did you hear the story about, the story that I told you is a popular one. This happened in a little, but no one can say that they were the girl in the ditch. They were the mom on top of the girl, anything like that. It's always a third-hand story. Some kids, though, said, oh, no, 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 I saw him. I did see the butterfly people, and they used their wings to protect us from debris. And some of the kids said not only did they see the butterfly people protect them, they saw the butterfly people flying around in the tornado and grabbing people who had been trapped in the tornado and flying them off into the sky. It's an interesting observation because we have a town here that was hit by this tornado, 22 miles of destruction. I think I said 20 earlier. 22 miles of destruction. 161 people killed, 1,150 people injured. The population of the town was over 50,000 people. 2,000 buildings leveled, 6,900 homes destroyed, 50,000 people. You only had a casualty count of 161 people. This town is also located squarely in the what's known as the Bible Belt. So it's a fairly religious area. The idea of these children seeing angel-like figures, part of it could be their religious upbringing. Part of it could be people overall trying to make sense over how could you lose so little lives in a town with 50,000 people with such massive destruction. Like, there must have been somebody looking out for us. Now, obviously, the other counterpoint is, why don't these angelic beings, why didn't they save everybody? And that's always a question when we look at natural disasters. And that's a philosophical question. But it is interesting to note that in this story, only the children could see the butterfly people is how they described them. I did a story a while back about a guy who walked into a school with his wife. They took the school hostage and he had built this bomb and he was going to blow up the kids if he didn't get his money. It's actually a really good episode. I'll put it in the show notes. It's one of my favorites. And in that story, angels showed up in the classroom, but only the kids could see them. You guys remember that? The angel showed up in the classroom and they were calming the children down and telling them what to do and getting, before the events were playing out, the angels were kind of like giving them advice. And it was something only the children could see. And it wasn't until afterwards when the children were being interviewed, they talked about the angels. So it's an interesting connection to that. These children who are in danger. And even we did the story about the Blue Lady in Miami. That's another great episode, Myths Over Miami. I'll put that in the show notes. Where it's only the children who are seeing these angelic figures that are interacting in their daily lives. Was there actually any butterfly people there? Were they figments of the imagination? Were they actually angels? Were they something else? Who knows, right? It's an interesting story nonetheless. It's either mass hysteria to explain why so few people died in such a massive event, or it's an actual phenomenon. That there is some external force trying to save people, or it's somewhere in between. Maybe it's tulpas, maybe it's people, children, creating these images that become real because they want so badly to be saved from the evils of the world around them. But whatever the reason, it truly is a miracle that more people didn't die during such a massive disaster. Kyler, I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys of the Carpenter Copter. We have helped them rebuild. I now have a pet elephant. I'm feeding it all the peanuts at once. We're going to put the elephant onto the Carpenter Copter. Let's leave behind Joplin, Missouri. We are headed out to small town USA. In small town USA, there's a 22-year-old woman. We don't know her name. We're going to call her Becca. And her 24-year-old boyfriend, we'll call him Robert. They've been dating for 4 years. Everything has been going great. But in the past 6 weeks, Becca's noticed that Robert's been acting a little weird. Just something seems off. Bye, honey, I have to go to work, Becca says as she opens the front door. She looks out, and in her garden, she sees a fresh piece of fruit. Now, that normally means you have a successful garden, but this was a fresh piece of fruit that was chopped up, just laying there, store-bought fruit. And so she asks Robert, hey, do you know why there's some fruit in the garden? And Robert goes, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Becca, I don't know how to say this, but there's a little family of mice in the shed, and I don't know. I just, they look so cute, you know, like the mama and the daddy and all the 300 babies. I wanted to feed them. So I was chopping up little pieces of fruit and leaving out in the garden, and at night the little mice come out and eat it. And Becca goes, that's kind of sweet, actually. That's kind of cute. Becca herself is into exotic pets. I don't know if a mouse counts as an exotic pet. A wild mouse in your shed is exotic. But Becca herself has exotic pets. She actually has giant African land snails that walk around this terrarium. Blah, 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 blah. Doing snail stuff. So she's like, oh, that's really cute, right? A couple weeks later, Robert starts this new hobby. He begins to cook for her. I'm struck with a passion for cooking. I was out late one night, a chef bit me. Now every full moon, I am forced to cook. He's cooking all the time. It's just this weird sudden change for him. He's making these meals. He's baking cakes, making pies, all this stuff. And she loves it. What woman doesn't want her man to be a great cook? So she's totally down with it. But after a while, she starts to realize that maybe not all men are meant to be cooks. Sometimes when she eats the food, she gets sick afterwards. But she doesn't make the connection. She just goes, maybe I'm just tired, right? As she's throwing up, she's like, bleh. You know what they say, if you throw up twice, time for a nap. Bleh. So she figures maybe it's just like hormones or that she's tired or something like that. She's not really thinking about it. But one day she's at work. She works at a coffee shop. And her boyfriend's friend, we'll call him Jerry, walks into the coffee shop and goes, hey, Becca, can I talk to you? And she's like, yeah, my break's coming up right now. Let's go ahead. And Jerry goes, listen, Becca, I don't really know how to tell you this, so I'm just going to come out and say it. He starts laughing. He starts laughing like me, like I would. He goes, you know how Robert's been making you a lot of food lately? And she's like, yeah, he's been making me tons of stuff. Cakes and pies and pasta. And Jerry's like, please stop. Don't go on any further. Jerry goes, listen. Robert thinks this is hilarious, but I don't. That's why I'm telling you this. He's been taking fresh pieces of fruit and leaving it out in the garden to attract slugs. And then he takes the slugs and he chops them up and he puts them in your food. She goes, what are you talking about? And he goes, I don't want to repeat it, right? I don't want to repeat it because now when I think of apple pie, I just think of slugs with cinnamon on them because that's what apple pie looks like anyways. He goes, I don't want to repeat it. She doesn't believe him. And he goes, I figured you wouldn't. He shows her photos of a jar of slugs and then slugs in a blender. We're halfway through this. Slugs in a blender is the halfway point. So she's obviously disgusted. She's also deeply in love with this man. She's a 22-year-old woman. She's in love with this man. She's not really thinking. So this post first showed up on like an advice board or something like that where she's asking this question. She goes, I don't know what to do. I confronted my boyfriend about feeding me slugs. She didn't rat out that the friend told her. So he said, because she said, I saw photos of it, and he goes, have you been snooping around my messages? Are you in my face? Which is kind of bearing the lead. If you're feeding somebody slugs, and even if they did hack your account, you can't get all indignant about it and be like, what? You violated my privacy. And you'd be like, yeah, you're poisoning me with slugs. Anyway, she ends up with going, he's mad at me because I'm mad at him for feeding me slugs, and I don't know how to deal with this. Please give me advice. People were like, there is no advice. Just leave him. Just absolutely leave him. She does post an update later where she had to go to urgent care because she had gotten really sick. It turns out she had a high level of metaldehyde in her system, which is a pesticide that is often used to kill slugs and snails. So the slugs and snails that she was eating were already poisoned themselves. She goes to urgent care. She's feeling sick. She has ulcers. They test her for that. The police are called by the medical authorities. She doesn't call the police, apparently. The urgent care people do, because they will do that. And Robert refuses to talk to the cops. She doesn't seem to press charges, as far as we can tell in this narrative, but he refuses to talk to the cops. He's basically like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not feeding anyone slugs. They're like, why would that even, the cops are looking at each other. They're like, seriously? We're on the slug beat now? We're investigating slug crimes? Because she doesn't really press charges and he doesn't fess up to anything, they can't do much. But so Robert says, okay, listen, we'll forget the whole law enforcement thing, Becca. Let's sit down and we will talk this through. I'll bring the snacks. I will bring delicious, delicious snacks. They have this meeting, so it's him and Becca, and then Robert's friend, who I don't know if it's the same guy ratting him out, it just says Robert's friend, and then Becca brings a friend as well, so they have this little powwow. And Robert confesses everything. He goes, listen, I want to be honest with you. I don't know why I'm doing this stuff. I have a compulsion to do it. It's kind of like an OCD type of thing. I just have to do it. And Becca's like, I can understand that. She actually does say that. I can understand that because she also has some issues emotionally. She understands the need to do things. He goes, I don't know why I do this. I love you, baby. I love you so much. And she goes, no, I understand. Like, maybe I know people have a compulsion to feed other people slugs. I'm sure that's somebody's fetish. And he goes, well, I've done more than that. It started off before the slugs. When she wasn't looking, he's like, look over there, a bird. And she turns. He would spit on her toast. That was the first thing he started doing. When she wasn't around and she made toast, he would spit on it. Now, that's gross, but that's not, like, too bad, right? I mean, I think at this point, all of us have eaten food with someone spitting it, either intentionally or unintentionally. You're rude to a waiter, they're spitting in your food. Or they're just talking a lot, they're spitting in your food. It's gross, but it's not end of the world gross. He also then admits to replacing her beta blockers, which is medication to regulate the beat of your heart, with salt. With salt, the one thing that if you get too much of actually affects the rhythm of your heart. Well, it's not the one thing, but it's one of the things you got to be careful of. So he was replacing her beta blockers, her heart medication, with salt. He just wanted to see what would happen. We then move to this level. She's a vegetarian, and he begins to replace her vegetarian products with meat products. She's like, oh my God, this is so delicious. This is the best vegetarian meal I've ever eaten. He goes, you mean you've ever meaten? She's like, what? That's not even a word. She had vegetarian sausage. He replaced that with real sausage. Same with chicken nuggets. She's like, oh my God, these are so good. These are the most delicious vegetarian foods on the planet. Then he made her curry, makes her delicious curry. And this is when she said that he started to get weird. This is one of the warning signs. He made curry and she's eating it. And whenever she would go to take a bite of it, he would start laughing. She's like, what? She go to take a bite of it. And she puts the spoon down. He's like, hee, hee, hee. Goes to eat it again. He's the crypt keeper all of a sudden. And it starts to make her paranoid. She can't figure out why he starts to laugh every time she goes to eat curry. So she's like, I don't want to eat curry. And she leaves the kitchen. She goes into the bedroom and they have this fight. And he goes, come on, just try the curry. And she takes a bite and it's super spicy. And he starts laughing. He goes, yeah, I put so much chili powder in there. Oh, I'm so sorry. But I thought it'd be a funny joke to like make it super spicy. That's why he was laughing every time she went to take a bite. You think, you know what? That's just a prank. That's not even close to spitting on someone's toast or feeding them delicious meat. Well, that's what he told her back then. Now he's given her the whole story. Remember her giant African land snails? One of them had run away, which is kind of hard for a giant snail. One of them, though, had gotten out of the box and she could never find it. Well, it turns out that he said he came home one day and it was dead. So he took it out of the terrarium, chopped it up, and put it in the curry. That was the very first time he fed her mollusk, was her own pet. And let's be honest, he probably didn't come home and it was dead. He probably killed it. So he tried feeding her own pet and couldn't contain his laughter as she was about to eat it. And she goes, I think he put on so much chili to kind of get rid of the taste. She's like, I know my mollusk. I could taste the snail from a mile away. She thinks he put the chili on to disguise the taste of the snail. He said at one point he took her toothbrush. You're like, Jason, please stop. He stopped. At one point he took her toothbrush and rubbed it on the toilet. But he said he felt bad about that and washed it off. Which I'd call shenanigans on that one because one, Just buy a new toothbrush, right? Like, if someone took your toothbrush and you saw them rubbing it on the toilet and they go, sorry, and they just ran it underneath the water for a bit, it's not clean, right? You got to get rid of the toothbrush. There's no amount of cleaning you can do to get rid of that. And he probably didn't do that. I'm imagining he read the room on that one. I'm imagining he said that and the look of horror in the other three people's faces. He goes, oh, no, but I washed that one off. But you would have to boil it. To get rid of all of that. He says he doesn't know why he does it. It's a compulsion. He loves her. He hopes that they can work it out. He'll make a delicious meal for everyone at the party. He goes, guys, let's have lasagna or beef stroganoff or anything else. I can hide disgusting things. And everyone's like, no. Later on in another post, she does reveal that she left him. But now she has an intense fear of slugs. She's afraid of leaving food out. She has to eat the food that's in front of her. She can't, like, get up and get a phone call or start making a meal and leave. Not like that happens all the time, but think about it, like, how many times throughout the day, like, I make my meal in stages. Like, I'll be cooking it. It's not really stages. I'll be cooking it, and then I'll go and I'll lift weights, and then I'll go and I'll... But imagine while I'm lifting those weights, a slug crawls across my food. That's what she's afraid of. She's afraid of slugs crawling across her food. She says... This is the weird part. This is the weird part. She goes, she has a problem with slugs invading her house. She goes, I find them everywhere. She goes, I see them coming into the house all the time. She goes, I've had to seal all of the gaps. She has an intense fear of it. Now, some of it may be just every so often a snail comes through or a slug comes through and she's blowing it up in her mind. Or she thinks that nature itself is coming after her. That slugs are being drawn to her presence. That's a little creepy. That's a little Tales from the Dark Side ending for you, right? She ate so many slugs that now they're always inching towards her. It's like It Follows, but it's called It Swallows. And it ends with her swallowing slugs. She's laying in bed one night and it's just 1,300 slugs crawling into her gullet. She can't even chew them up. They're so in her mouth. She can't even close her jaws. But, I mean, that's an imaginary scenario. Super disgusting imaginary scenario. She's suffocated by all the slugs. But this is where it gets even creepier than my imaginary. Every slug in the world will eventually crawl in her body. After she breaks up with her boyfriend, it had been a while. She broke up with her boyfriend. He moved out of the house. She's living alone. She's afraid of these slugs coming in. One day she's doing some cleaning in the kitchen. She finds a jar. She's posted a photograph of this. It's a jar of 4 dead slugs. And she goes, he must have left these here. He must have caught these, and these were slugs he never fed me. They look old. They look dead. He must have left them here. And it's interesting because it's almost like she's trying to convince herself that somehow her boyfriend didn't recently sneak into her house while she was gone and leave 4 dead slugs hidden in her kitchen. Who's to say that when she's not at home, he's somehow getting into the house and planting slugs all over the place? Now, this story could obviously be made up. It could be some sort of internet myth. The username on these posts are blanked out for the woman's privacy. But even if they weren't, it could be a LARP, could be made up. But we know well enough that there's a bunch of sickos out there. So this story doesn't break the bounds of the imagination. So if it is true, this guy is still out there. This guy is somebody's boyfriend. This guy is somebody's coworker. This guy is somebody you may know. Someone who gets off on chopping up slugs and putting them in food. Possibly your food, right? You may know this guy or someone like him. Someone who seems totally normal, but just wants to run a few tests, pull a few pranks, have a secret laugh at your expense. They could be your neighbor. They could be your minister. They could be the cook at your favorite restaurant. So somewhere out there is a man with a gleam in his eye, smile on his face, a pocket full of slugs, and a chef's hat. You may think you're about to sit down and enjoy a delicious meal, and maybe you will. Maybe you'll find out that for you, the most delicious food on the planet is slugs in a blender. You freak. You mutant. Dead Rabbit Radio, I have no other way in this episode other than you eating a bunch of slugs. And then you wake up and there's 1,300 slugs in your chest trying to get into your mouth. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. Twitter is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. And I'm glad you're like, I wish I didn't listen to it today. I'm glad you don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.